at that point in my life, I knew that I had FASD, but to me, FASD was you can't read and write, and your mom drank because she was a bad person. It was a very negative stigma to FASD. I didn't want to have that negative stigma about me, so I didn't want to stand up and say, oh, I'm not smart enough, I'm not good enough, because that's what I thought in my head. Because of the way I was acting, teachers didn't understand what was going on. So they saw the behavior, so they reacted to the behavior. Now, as I would try to do the work, I would go into the LD class every third period, sit down with the teacher and go, okay, so this is what I did in the other classes. Can we go over it? And can I repeat it and do it over and over again so I can get it? They would go over the steps with me. Step one, step two, step three. Eventually, again, that routine repetition, I could actually start to figure it out. Bell would ring, I would go home. I would sit down with my dad, and my dad would say, okay, let's do your math homework. And he'd go over it with me, and he goes, okay, so what you have to do is step one, step two, there you go. And I go, no, that's not right. He goes, yes, it is. Step one, step two, there you go. I'd be like, no, that's not right. He would get frustrated. I would get frustrated. I'd slam the book down. I'd go to my room, and I'm like, I'm not doing the stupid work. And he's like, fine. You don't want to do the work. You have to deal with the consequence. Was the way my dad teaching me right? Yes. But was it different? Yes. In my head, I was actually able to do the work because I learned it that one way, and that made sense to me. Also in my head, when you have processing problems, being able to deliver exactly what you want to say, especially when you're stressed or anxious, can be very difficult. In my head, the sentence was, no, that's not the way the teacher taught me. For me, it's not right. What came out of my head was half that sentence. No, it's not right. So I go to my room, be upset, go to school the next day. My teacher would say, hand in your homework. And I'd have nothing to hand in. He'd go, you know what? You have detention today. And I'd be like, okay, sure, whatever. So I go through all the classes the rest of that day, end up going at the bell, running into the gym. And my math teachers, who also is my basketball coach, goes, Miles, you know that one thing that makes you feel good? You know that one thing that you're actually maybe even better than most of the other students at? That one thing that you can do really well and you're actually normal feeling when you do this? That one thing called basketball that you absolutely love? You don't get it. Go away. Now, obviously, that's not what the coach said. The coach said, you didn't do your homework, go to detention. So I would come in detention and I would sit there. And as I sat down, I would be like, Miles, sit still. Sorry. Is this a joke to you here, Miles? Like, you think it's funny to be in detention? I was like, no. The reason I was acting silly and funny and all this stuff is I've had a good day, so I don't understand why I'd be upset. What was going on was that understanding of consequences for my actions. Now, I didn't understand when I threw that rock at that kid, why 20 minutes later, I was getting the consequences for it. So now here I am in junior high, because at 3:30 on Tuesday afternoon, I didn't do my homework. 24 hours later, 3:30 on Wednesday afternoon, I'm sitting in detention. If I don't understand the consequences for my actions when it happens in 20 minutes, do I understand it when it's a whole day later? Absolutely not. All I know is I'm bad and I'm in trouble again, for whatever reason. Because I'm always bad and I'm always in trouble. You can play with that. So it wasn't the fact that I didn't care and I wasn't listening, and teachers and principals and people looking at me and be like, he's going to learn. He has to learn. Why is he not learning? It was interesting because now I look back and go, had they better understood what was going on, and maybe even if I was able to say and better understand what was going on, maybe we could have realized, you know what, I'm going to be in detention every day anyways for one reason or another. Let's just make it an extra period. And in that period, I do my work so I don't have homework. Takes the stress away from my parents, takes the stress away from me, takes the stress away from the teachers. It's a win-win. I have the time to do the work, understand it, and get it done. But instead it was, he has to learn from this punishment. So I continued on going through school, and as I went through school, I figured, you know, it seems to be that it's school where everything seems to be happening and where I'm really struggling. So I thought maybe once I'm done school, things will get easier. What I didn't understand was that when I was growing up and I was getting older, my brain and the way it developed wasn't at the same level or same pace I was at my age. So when I was 12, developmentally, the way my brain worked, the way I thought, the way I reacted and understood things was that of an 8-year-old. When I was 16, it was that of a 12-year-old. So I understood things like a 12-year-old, so I'd react like when I was reacting like a child, people would get upset and be like, why are you acting like a kid? You're a teenager, stop acting like a kid. I was acting exactly age appropriate to where I was at developmentally. But people couldn't see that. Again, they saw my behaviors, and not understanding my behaviors, jumped the punishment of telling me that I was doing things wrong. Right? Now, the other part of that started to be really become difficult was, now because of where my brain was and the way I acted, people thought I was immature. In actuality, it's called dismaturity, where developmentally, you're not where you are chronologically. So kids didn't want to hang out with me because I was that weird, silly guy that was immature. So in school was difficult, out of school was difficult. I just couldn't find a place that seemed to be safe and okay. As I went into junior high, I thought, okay, this is getting difficult. Once I get to high school, I'll just finish school and all these problems will be gone. I went into high school, and where I was going to school in Alberta, high school was grade 10 to 12. I figured a couple more years, I'm done. Going into grade 10, at this point, I'm at a school where they work with a lot of kids with learning issues as well as behavioral problems. And a lot of the classes in that school were hands-on. So it was woodworking, mechanics, there was a hairdresser, a daycare, all of these different jobs or classes that were hands-on. If I had the opportunity to do something hands-on, I could make sense of it. If I could see it, I could understand it. But if I couldn't, that was what was called abstract, right? Things that are very abstract are things like money and time. Math is very, very difficult for many individuals with FASD because it's abstract. You can't see that, right? I was in a school where I was doing things hands-on. I could see the process happening and I could make sense of it. To better understand abstract learning and what was also happening that seemed like a behavior was if you have on your wrist, you hold your arm up. What's your name?
Neil.
Okay, so who watches that probably?
Neil.
Okay. Neil, can you take it off? That's okay. So that's Neil's watch. Neil loves that watch. He got that from his great grandma, who found it in a little souvenir shop in the middle of Jamaica while she was taking her dog for a walk. Now, Neil, can you put the watch on the chair there? Neil, can you go far away or just get out of here, Neil? Go away. All right. So now I come into the room and I'm like, hey, cool. What's your watch? Alright, so Neil now comes back in the room. Alright, Neil, this is where your big acting debut comes in. Alright, so now I have your favorite watch. The thing that you absolutely love that your grandma gave to you and means so much to you. What do you say and what do? When you see me with it?
Hey, you've got my watch. Can I have it back?
No, it's not yours.
Not mine, I left it on the chair.
Yeah, no, it was on the chair, but it's not yours. You didn't have it. It's not your watch.
It was from my great grandmother who got it, you know, overseas. And all that stuff.
It's not. So now the teacher comes in, and Neil's upset because I have his watch. He tells the teacher, Miles took my watch. Miles, did you steal Neil's watch? Now, what it looks like is I stole it because I have it. Again, if I was actually stealing something, am I going to be like, hey everybody, look at what I stole. I hope I don't get caught. No. Instead, I'm going to be like, oh, okay, I'll put this away and not tell anyone. What was happening was, thank you, when Neil had that on his wrist and held it up, that's concrete. I can see that and it's solid and concrete, makes sense, that belongs to Neil. When it was there by itself and Neil was gone, that's abstract. I can't see any connection to it. So it's pretty much floating in the air. It's okay that I can take it. Now I had to learn the difference between that, right? But I didn't need to be judged as if I stole it. But I did have to learn that it's not okay to take people's things. Because the teacher wasn't gonna come in and go, Neil, you know what? Miles has FASD, so he'll probably take your watch and it's okay. Miles has FASD, so he'll probably take your cup and it's okay. He'll take your glasses and it's okay. That's not going to happen. So I have to learn that I can't simply just take something if it doesn't belong to me. Now you would think, why do I have to tell that to a kid that's 12? I could see a little kid, yes. But if that's where I'm at developmentally, that's where I need to be supported, right? Now, it doesn't mean you're going to come up to me when I'm 12 and be like, you're a buddy, you little guy, what's up, you little rascal? All right, little buddy. Okay, we can't take watches, can we? No. You're like, what are you doing? You're weird. I thought I was weird. You're weird. But it's the conversation of, hey, we just can't take things that don't belong to us. We got to make sure we ask and find out first. So here I was, again, struggling with that concrete versus abstract. And that, again, is part of the FASD. But I didn't know that, right? In this school, these classes I was taking were concrete. I could see the work being done, and I could actually do it. At the end of grade 10, I went into that summer, was hanging out at the basketball courts, and I met these guys. And as we spent the summer together, I started hanging out with them more and more. One day, they invited me over to their house. Now, I'd grown up in a home that was very religious. They were Mormons, and so they didn't drink, they didn't smoke, they didn't even have coffee. I remember being at a sleepover and having a Dr. Pepper once, and I was like, I'm going to hell. So here I was hanging out with these guys, and when I go over to their house the first time, one of them sits down with his dad and cracks open a beer. And then the other brother sits down with his mom and starts smoking a cigarette with her. And I'm like, whoa, this is crazy. I've never seen this. So there they are, and they're talking, and they're swearing, and they're doing all this stuff, and I'm like, oh my goodness, totally different lifestyle. A couple days of hanging out with these guys, one of them says to me, hey Miles, going up to the liquor store, do you want anything? And I was like, sure. So I gave him $20 and said, give me whatever. Now the reason I said give me whatever was because I'd never drank before, I didn't know what to ask for, but I didn't want to look silly, so I was like, sure, give me whatever. So he ends up getting me this Wildberry cooler. I drink half of it, pass out, wake up a little bit later. They're all laughing. I'm like, oh, I was just tired. Drink the other half, pass out again. I started hanging out all throughout that summer. Started having more times hanging out with these guys where I'm drinking. And what starts out as partying and was fun in the beginning quickly changes. People started looking at me and going, Miles, why are you hanging out with these guys? These are not good guys. These are guys that are going around, breaking into houses, stealing cars, walking around carrying guns, and you're hanging out with them. Why? And I was like, no, they're good guys, you just don't know them. I knew that they weren't good guys. I knew that the things they were doing weren't good. I also knew that they were now taking advantage of me. If I had money, they wanted to hang out and be my best friends. But if I didn't, they wanted nothing to do with me. But people would say, stop hanging out with them, Miles. What people didn't realize was here I was, 17 years old, and for the very first time in my life, somebody wanted to be my friend. For the very first time in my life, somebody wanted to hang out with me. And all I had to do to have these friends, I didn't have to do a math test, I didn't have to do a spelling bee, I didn't have to remember anything. All I had to do was show up with a case of beer or a bag of weed, and they'd be my friends. That was a lot easier than doing a math test. For the first time, I felt accepted. Now, I grabbed onto that. Grabbed onto it very hard because I'm like, I just want to be accepted. As the summer went on and I got heavily involved in those things, I ended up getting kicked out of home. Now, with my attachment disorder, it was always a matter of me thinking in my head, I'm not good enough and nobody wanted me. If somebody wanted me, I would have stayed in one of those families. And I thought when I was adopted, yeah, you love me, you're taking me in, but you'll get rid of me soon enough. It took another 16 or so years, but here I was feeling like they were getting rid of me too. Now, what they were saying was, you can't obey the rules, you're doing that stuff, you can't do that in this house, if you're going to do that, you can't be here. I packed up a bag of clothes and I left home. I was like, fine, I don't need to be here. So here I was, out of the house. Now, because I wasn't living at home, I couldn't pay for my school fees, so I ended up getting kicked out of school. Even though at that point in my life, I actually had the best attendance, even though I was homeless, and the best grades I'd ever got. But I was kicked out because I couldn't pay for my school fees. I figured, you know what, all these years that I've been banging my head against the wall, getting up every morning going, I have to go to this place where I feel like a complete failure, and all of a sudden somebody's going, you know what, you don't have to come here anymore. Part of me went, I am really trying, why don't you see that? And the other part of me went, thank goodness, I don't have to come here anymore. So I left school. Now, what started to happen was, at that point in my life, I really started to feel this sense of loss. Because I no longer had school, I no longer had my family. I started to realize that these guys actually weren't my friends. And at that same time, I started to look for my biological family. And I thought this would be the answer to everything. When I ended up finding my brother, we were talking on the phone, and he explained to me, you know, that we're gonna meet up, and I was all excited. Because here's my family, here's my blood. This is where it's gonna be all awesome. I'd always envisioned what it was gonna be like to meet my family. I'd walk in these apartments, go in the door, it'd be my mom and my dad, my two brothers and my two sisters, and there I would be, standing there, and we would come together as a family, and it'd be picture perfect. I had pictured this for, at that point, it had been about 16 years. As I talked to my brother on the phone to make plans to meet up for the first time, he told me about mom and dad. And he goes, we have different dads. I said, oh, okay. He goes, anyways, your dad, he killed some guy, he went to jail, and he got killed. And I was like, oh. He goes, yeah, and then mom, she died a couple years ago from alcohol. And I was like, oh, okay. He goes, anyways, man, I'll see you tomorrow. Hangs up the phone. I stood there holding the phone. What was this dream and this vision and my last hope that I had for the last 16 years was gone in 16 seconds. I thought when I left school, all of those struggles I was going to have would be gone too. But what I realized very quickly was instead of classmates, I had coworkers. Instead of teachers, supervisors, instead of principals, managers. All those sensory issues that I struggled with, all the information processing that I struggled with, all of that came along with me. And all of those struggles continued into the workplace. So again, started not succeeding at these things. At that point in my life, I really got to a point where I was very heavily involved in drinking. And it was my way of coping. People would say, Miles, you know, why are you drinking all the time? Why are you doing this? And at that point in my life, it was the only way I knew how to deal with everything. Was it the best and most positive coping mechanism? Absolutely not. But was it the only way I knew to cope at that time? Yes. You see, people would say, you need to put down the bottle, Miles. As a society, we need to stop saying, put down the bottle, and we need to find out why the person picked up the bottle first. I can't put it down until I realize why I picked it up. So here I was going through life, going to these job programs, and I thought, I gotta keep trying. So as I keep trying, hopefully something will work out. I went to this one pre-employment program, worked on resume writing and job interview skills, and when I did this program, I started to really put in the effort. After 3 months of the program, I finished it, and they came up to me and said, congratulations, you finished it, you get to go to graduation. And I was like, wow. So I remember going into this graduation in the church basement. And I walked down the aisle, and I'm wearing these jeans and my grandpa's oversized jacket, and I had these blue shoes on. It was a mishmash of colors. And I remember Brad, the facilitator there, putting out his hand, holding the certificate, going, congratulations, you did it. Another moment in my life that I remember exactly what it was like, what I was wearing, everything. Because for one of the very first times in my life, somebody said, congratulations, you did it. For one of the very first times in my life, somebody acknowledged me in a positive way. And I was like, wow, maybe I am doing this. That sparked inside of me, I'm gonna try again. And so I went and got a job. This time I got a job working at a leisure center coaching kids sports. I enjoyed working with kids and I enjoyed sports, so it was a good combination. As I was doing this, I was becoming successful. My supervisor would call me in the office and say, Miles, you're doing a great job, but what we need is we need you here on time. The kids love you, the parents love you, we really want you here, okay? And I was like, okay. I would leave that office and I would try harder and I'd be on time. And I was late, and I was late. 2 weeks later, same conversation. Miles, you're doing a great job, we really want you here, you just gotta be on time. The kids love you, the parents love you, you're doing a good job. What was the difference between that and school? When I was in school and I was on time, did anyone say anything? When I was in school and I didn't hand in my homework, somebody had something to say then for sure. When I was late, somebody had something to say then for sure. But when I handed in my homework or I was on time, very rarely, if ever, did anyone have anything to say then. Here, this lady was acknowledging the good stuff I was doing and asking me to work on this other part. I was more than willing to work on that other part. But it just felt awesome to be acknowledged for the stuff I was doing. So what I didn't realize at that time was because of the way that my body is with the sensory issues, not only is it hard to go throughout the day with all the noises, lights, sounds, and smells, when I go home at night with the sensory issues and with all the bubble trouble, there's no off switch on my body. I can't lay down in bed and go, okay, bubbles, turn off now. When I lay down in bed, I have to deal with the smell of the pillowcases, the blankets, the sheets, all of that. I have to deal with all those sounds that are going on, everything that's happening, and my body's still moving. What I didn't realize was because there's no off switch, I don't actually sleep like everybody else. We sleep to recharge our brain and our body. If you don't get the proper sleep, you wake up tired. Can you imagine what it's like to live inside a body that is go, go, go all the time? So what I want you to do is do this again. Okay? Go as fast as you can. You're just going to do that for 10 more minutes. Okay, could you do it for 10 minutes? How would you feel? Tired, right? So that's what, oh, you can stop. Great. But that's what it feels like inside my body is go, go, go all the time with the bubbles. That's why my body's always tired, and I don't get to sleep and rest like other people, so it's very hard for me to get up. My body and my brain are not recharged because I didn't get to sleep like everybody else. But yet I had the same expectations on me that everybody else that got to sleep had. So here I was, struggling with this job, trying to get there on time. But I started working on it. Eventually got to a point where I found a way that getting the right covers, the right sheets, things that I picked out that I could handle really helped. Also too, you know, going to a doctor, speaking with him about some medications that help me with sleep. Now, I really need you to hear this. There's no medication for FASD, okay? There's not, you know, you can't take this and then FASD will be all fine and everything. This medication helped for part of what I struggled with, and that was the sleep, okay? So here I was now to be able to be successful there. One day this lady says, Miles, I'm doing a conference on FASD. Do you want to come here and speak? And I was like, okay, sure. So I go to the conference and I'm speaking. I don't really understand a lot about FASD, but I'm thinking, okay, I know I have it, but I'll just share a little bit about my life story. So I started talking. Then I got to a point where I was in my life at that point, and I started talking about how I was implementing routine and recreation into everything I did. I would pay my rent with my first check and half my bills. With my second check, I'd pay the other half of the bills and the groceries, and then the money left over was fine. I'd do it all on the same page and all at the same time. When I had bookings for work, I'd have it on a sticky note. It'd be highlighted. It'd be my day timer. I had a lot of structure with routine and repetition in my life. These were things that were helping me. As I started to go through this presentation, I started to really realize, oh my goodness, I'm kind of doing this. I'm kind of starting to succeed here. I ended that presentation. A lady came up to me and said, hey, we're doing a conference in BC. Can you come there and speak? And I said, sure. Went to the one in BC. Lady there said, we're doing one in Saskatchewan. Can you come here and speak? I said, sure. So I started traveling around to these different conferences. And when I go to the conferences, I started attending the other sessions. And when I attended these sessions and learned about FASD, that's where I got to the point I could now go and say, it's not that I don't listen and I'm not paying attention. It's what I call the bubble trouble. So I could remove that label of not listening or paying attention. It wasn't that I was lazy and didn't care. I could remove that label because now I understand that it was processing. I processed things differently. I could start removing these negative labels when I understood what is actually going on. When I understood, made sense of, and became accepting of my diagnosis, that's when I understood, made sense of, and became accepting of myself. This was a huge thing for me in my life because now I could understand what was going on and I felt better about myself. I no longer was going to be a victim who was suffering and struggling with all of these things. In our lives, we all have situations that happen to us. In our lives, we're going to have millions of opportunities to either be a victim or resilient. It is on you how you handle those situations and how you let those situations handle you. I could simply go around and go, oh, I've got FASD and I struggle with reading and writing and getting on places on time and math and money and blah, 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 all this stuff. and I could be a victim, but that's not going to do any good. Or I could learn about tools and strategies and techniques to be successful and continue on focusing on what my strengths were, and that's how I could live my life to be resilient. Now, I'm not saying that you're going to have situations that are hard and difficult, that you're not going to have times where you're sad, you're depressed, that you're going to lose a job, you're going to lose a relationship, maybe someone's going to pass away. All of those situations will happen to us eventually at some point in our lives. I'm not saying don't be there in it. Be there in it, just don't live there. It is okay to feel sad. It is okay to feel down. It is okay to feel frustrated. Be there, but don't live there. Too often in our lives, we choose to live there and stay in that state of being a victim. Allow yourself. There's times where I say to myself, okay, it's been a little rough, I've been feeling down and sad, but you know what? I'm going to give myself 2 more days, and I'm going to go out and play volleyball, or I'm going to go to the mall and go for a walk, or I'm going to do something. I allow myself to have those feelings and have those emotions and things like that, but again, I'm there, but I'm not going to live there. That was a huge thing for me. As I started to do the conferences and started to understand myself and started to have this self-belief that maybe I had a purpose, maybe there was a reason I was here, I was starting to see these things I was good at. And that's what I focused on. I could now take the topic of FASD and explain it different than other people. I could go and use bubbles, and I could use noisemakers and gloves and rubber pencils and glasses and do all of these things for people to better understand FASD. I wasn't going to read it out of a textbook, but I was going to be interactive with people and help them understand it. I went from being, for so many years, going, my brain doesn't work like other people's. I hate the way my brain works. To now going, my brain doesn't work like other people's. I love the way my brain works, right? Loving the way my brain worked, the way I thought, and the way I was able to be creative. So as I went through this life, starting to understand these things and starting to appreciate what I was able to do rather than what I wasn't able to do. It was those moments in my life that stuck out. It was the moment that I got the blue jeans. It was the moment that Brad gave me the certificate. It was the moment that I did my first presentation. It was these moments that stuck out in my life as moments that I lived my life by. It was the moment that 6 months ago, my beautiful baby daughter was born, and I got to hold her in my arms. And I looked down at my daughter, and for a long time, I actually thought I wouldn't have kids. Because of the lifestyle I was living and the things I was doing, I really didn't think I was going to live past 25. To have a beautiful baby girl and hold her in my arms, to look down at her, it was at that point in my life I no longer had attachment disorder, because I knew that she had my heart and I had hers, and there's never going to be anything that was going to come between us. That was a moment in my life. Another moment in my life was 3 weeks ago when my beautiful fiance walked down the aisle and became my beautiful wife. That was a moment I'll always remember. Those are the moments of my life that I remember. Those are the moments that define me. I have FASD, but I'm not FASD. I am not a victim who suffers. I am somebody who lives successfully with FASD. I am now a consultant to a diagnostic clinic in BC. I travel around as an educator and motivational speaker. I've had a lot of great success and a lot of great things in my life. I surround myself with good, healthy people. I've learned new coping mechanisms, so now I'm completely clean and sober. This life that I live now is one of understanding where I wanted to be in my life and what I learned from the past. I don't look back at my life and go, oh man, school was rough. I wish that didn't happen. I wish I didn't go through all that stuff. You know, and I look back and go, oh, I really regret having to do that. I don't. I actually take those things and use them to learn from them. I'm not going to waste the first 27 years of my life and go, ah, that was unfortunate. Instead, I'm going to acknowledge it, embrace it, and go, what did I learn from it? Because now I can help other people. I've been given this gift that's not mine to keep, it's mine to share. And it's an amazing gift. Today, I want to thank you for the opportunity to come here and speak to you. As we've gone through these communities, it wasn't about necessarily people understanding FASD and just simply saying, okay, that's what FASD is, but it was also to be able to start the conversation. for people to understand that it's okay to talk about FASD. That we see FASD, and hopefully you understand now that it's about sensory issues. It's about the maturity level, the developmental level being different from the chronological. It's about the processing. It's about the bubble trouble. It's about all of those things that make FASD. Doesn't mean the person can't do things. It means we have to find out where their strengths are and what they can do, right? That's what we're doing this for. The reason that we're also doing this too is because we want to move past the shame and blame and stigma of FASD. The biggest part of that is because of the stigma and shame and blame that's associated with birth mothers. I felt and thought that for a long time. It wasn't until I was in my 20s and I found this piece of paper that documented stuff about my mom. And in that paper it said, when Terry would go home, Shirley, that was my mom, would whoop him for the hour-long visit and rock him. Could my mom give me clothes, food, shelter, a safe environment? No. But did my mom love me and would just hold and rock me? Yes. That's the relationship I take with my mom. At no point did I think my mom welcomed me pregnant, think, well, I don't want him to be able to read, so I'm going to grab some vodka. I don't want him to be able to do some math, so I'm going to have some rum. I don't want him to be able to have friends succeed or have a job or do anything successful in life. I'm going to grab another beer. Did my mom know she was pregnant? Did she know how far along she was? Did she understand the effects of drinking during pregnancy? When society would look at my mom and go, shame and blame on you for what you're doing, they would also not only leave her, but society started leaving me. You're a victim who suffers because of her choices. And that wasn't fair to my mom, and certainly not fair to me, because I didn't do anything. And my mom didn't do anything. To be able to get past that stigma and to have those conversations is so huge. So when someone says, what do you do about, FASD, it's almost, oh, that's too bad. Start having a conversation and go, actually, no. It just means that person's got to figure out what's going to work for them. FASD can look very similar to ADD, ADHD, autism, many different things, right? We're okay with talking about and supporting those other things, but not FASD, and that's because of the stigma. So we need to move past that. As I said, I live with FASD. I'm not FASD. But I got to a point in my life where I chose to live my life through FASD. And as you leave here today, I hope that each and every one of you can live your life through FASD. When I was in the park and had that bag of clothes and nothing else, I had to have this blind faith that there was a purpose for me. My parents always raised me to focus on my ability, not my disability. And that's what started helping me be successful later on in life. To find out where my strengths were was huge. Not what I couldn't do, but what I could do. Believing in myself that I had self-worth and self-purpose helped other people start believing in myself too. So, this is how I now live my life through FASD, which is faith, ability, strength, and determination. I hope that you guys have the opportunity to come together as a community and keep working and talking about FASD. But also, too, that as a community, we can start to affect society, moving away from the shame and blame of what FASD is, because now we have the right information on what's going on. Yeah. I thank you so much for this opportunity to speak to you this evening. And thank you for sitting and listening to me.